Fantastic. So, you know when you text someone, you say, "I'm ready when you are."
Yeah.
I texted that, said, "I'm ready when you are," and I wasn't ready.
Well done.
Just wasn't ready. I hadn't got my headset that was upstairs. I hadn't plugged
Yep.
in. Just wasn't ready. But I
But
told
apart from
you,
that,
apart from that, I was well and truly ready.
a couple of things to discuss. Our episode where we had on Jordan from Vegan Camp Out, which was our first anniversary episode. We got some comments on our Instagram post regarding that, and one from Dave in Cardiff, one of our super fans, I think.
Hey, David in Cardiff.
Yes, congratulations on your first birthday. A great way to mark this anniversary. You've done well to get some brilliant guests over the year. In fact, they've all been amazing. I've learned that we aren't pervy perfect vegans, not by a long shot. Here's to another year. Now, pervy perfect vegans is a throwback to our earliest episodes where we had like a recorded intro. And
Right.
you stumbled over the word perfect. And it sounded like pervy perfect vegans.
Wow, okay.
And I left it in just because it sounded really funny. But we haven't used that intro for a long time. So well done, Dave, for the callback to that, because that's a great show knowledge. Well
Yeah.
done.
Yeah. You
Love
imagine someone being that much of a fan.
it. I'd completely forgotten about it. That's the funny thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was awesome. So there's that. And Cosmic Skeptic. What do you know
So,
about Cosmic
I
Skeptic?
don't know much about Cosmic Skeptic. However, what I do know is that he got what's the word? He was released as attending vegan campout. He was going to be one of
Yes, he was on the posters.
the celebrity activist type people. I never heard of him before. He also came on. He didn't come on. Rory mentioned him as
Yes.
being influenced. Rory was influenced by Cosmic Skeptic. I did a little search of Cosmic Skeptic, see what he was about. Didn't really do much more than that. Just looked through his post. Thought doesn't really interest me. But okay, whatever. Neither here nor there. And then I knew something about some news that came out, which I'm sure you're about to mention.
So there's a bit of a strange post that appeared on his well, I've only actually seen a screen grab of it, so that's I'm not sure where it was posted. Maybe it was Instagram, I don't know. I've never followed him, so I don't know. But basically, he's announced to his followers that he's basically eating seafood.
Nice.
For health reasons, which well, obviously is a load of bollocks, isn't it? But
It
it
is, yeah, it is,
isn't
yeah.
it? We'd have no ancient vegans if eating seafood was what was needed for your health.
No,
Simple as that.
exactly.
Simple as that. So anyway, so he's yes, and has very rightly faced absolute dogs abuse for it,
Absolutely, yeah, why not?
because. You know, he's another one with a Patreon account that people are paying money to support his vegan activism.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's not vegan. So what does that mean for the people who have given him money to support his activism? Do they get it back?
Yeah, who
Seems like
knows?
it's a bit, leaves a nasty taste in the mouth, much like seafood.
Yeah, definitely like seafood. God. Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I don't know. If you're out there as an activist and you're doing those sorts of things, then you've got to be squeaky clean. And if you're putting yourself out there as that, you've got to be honest. And he's got to be. He has been honest, I know. But to have been an activist in the first place and then coming out with that's it, yeah.
Spot
Idiot.
on.
Idiot
Yeah.
is my thought on that. I could
It's not
go
one.
harsher, but I'm not
Yeah,
perfect.
don't. We're not pervy perfect
Not
vegans,
perfect. No, we don't.
are we? And his name does not appear on the vegan campout list anymore.
Oh, is he took off?
Yeah, but I saw a post yesterday where they'd, shall we say, refreshed
Wow.
lineup, and he's not on it.
Fair play. Yeah.
So good on them for taking him off, I say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's just that's disgraceful, isn't it? What an idiot.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So the final thing that I've got, the British Podcast Awards.
Oh yeah.
We haven't won an award. We I saw a post on their Instagram and it said calling for nominations, and I thought, wouldn't it be funny if we nominated ourselves?
Or if Martin and Dave did.
Yeah, come on, guys. So I looked into it and started filling out the form, and then as you get right to the end, it says enter payment details, and I was like, what are these payment details then? What do I need to pay to nominate? And at the very, very bottom of the page, it was £165 to nominate a
Bargain.
podcast, which I thought,
Bargain.
that doesn't seem right. 165 quid to be nominated for an award. What?
Oh man, can I have an award, please? Yeah, it'll be 165 quid, mate.
Yeah.
Just to ask
Just to
for it,
be
not even get it.
nominated. Yeah.
I don't even want an
Anyway,
award. I don't want an
no, I
award.
was going to say, we haven't got any shelf space for an award, so stuff them.
I'll go to one of them shops and get one of the little plastic ones you get at school with the red,
Yes.
white, and blue ribbon. I'll just go
Yeah.
over to them and say I'm great.
Well, yeah, just a big rosette.
Really big
Best
rosette.
podcast
Yeah.
hosts
Cover my
of a vegan podcast that's called How I Vegan Podcast.
cover my
Maybe
big
I tell you what. Why don't we set up our own awards?
Yes. We would win the best vegan award, best podcast award for a vegan podcast that gets people to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
I think we'd win that one.
Yes, absolutely. Best audience share of any show that's on at this time, on this day of the week in the North Norfolk area. Yes. Okay. Little Alan Partridge reference there for anybody who's listening. Good. Okay. What else have we
Wow.
got? We haven't mentioned who our guest is. It's quite a big guest today, I think. Our most famous
Yeah,
guest.
I think yeah, he's up there. It's good. I think tonight's going to be fun. This person is quite outgoing on their social medias, so shall we
Yeah,
say.
good
Yeah,
shout.
it's
Good
quite outgoing,
shout.
quite lively, quite yeah, seems quite cool. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and it's quite exciting because it's someone I've met, but you haven't.
Yeah,
It's someone who came
because
to
you.
us. So it's someone who came to us to ask to be on. And yeah, we got invited to a special event, which was our first invite, which makes
That's
us feel like we've made it now.
yeah. The next
Famous.
step is to get nominated for an award
Without having to pay for
without having to pay for
it. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah,
Or at least, go
you were
on.
proper seeing some famous people, weren't you?
I know, yeah.
Famous in influencer, vegan influencer world.
Yeah, famous
But
in our
you
circles.
were, what's that phrase? You were
Rubbing
edit
shoulders with the famous, rich and famous.
rubbing shoulders with the rich and famous. That'll do. Yeah, I was very
Yeah.
jealous, very jealous. I mean, I've messaged some of those people that you met, and they haven't replied. If they're
Wow.
listening. If they're listening, which I'm sure they are, maybe they could message us as well and see if they want to
That
come.
would be good.
I mean, I've already
Ask them to
messaged them.
come
All
on.
they've got to do is reply. So
Yeah,
that'd be
but you're
nice.
not bitter. That's
No,
good.
not at all.
At least you've moved on.
Sir, can I have some more? No,
Yeah.
not claim
Leave me
to
alone,
opinion.
stalker. Block. Awesome.
Ah.
So, also, our post when we were at the Derby Vegan Market,
Oh, yeah.
when we met Emily, one of our previous guests,
Yep.
there was a photo of the two of us. And those running sisters,
Yes.
Natalie and Charlotte, said, commented on the post, love your hoodie, Wes. Because you were wearing your, not your
Not your
mum,
mum, not your
not your
milk.
milk, which is a really cool hoodie,
I love
I've got
it.
to say.
I love it. I still can't believe we had Vossages that day. which were amazing.
Yes. Your first
And
Vossage, wasn't it?
it was my first Vossage. However, I'd worked out how to eat a hot dog with beard. It's very
yes.
So, right, let's take it back a minute. So eating with a big beard.
Yeah. A great big bushy beard.
With your fingers is a nightmare.
Yes.
Because you get beard in your mouth, you start chewing it. It's all a bit weird and horrible. It's foul. But I'm not cutting my beard because I love my beard. So I've got this hot dog and I'm like, I've literally done how to eat it without it going everywhere. And I've got this light grey hoodie. And I'm thinking this is going to get messy if I get it wrong. So I've got it and I've finally worked out to get it into said mouth, eat it. And there was no mess. I got to the end. I checked my face with the
You did a
mirror
good
up
beard check, didn't you?
with my
Yep.
phone in reverse. I looked down my top and there was nothing. Nothing.
Yep.
Not a single spillage. So I was clear. It was good.
Incredible. Yep.
Me and you then walked through Derby to a newsagent to pick a newspaper up. And someone stopped us to say, that's a really cool hoodie. And I looked down
yes.
and
there was
a great big mustard stain on it. I was like,
what? Yes! I've forgotten that.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, that was tremendous.
I literally finished everything and it was all good. I looked
Yeah.
down, checked myself, nothing. And then I met someone, that's a really good hoodie. Plus your lovely mustard stain.
Lovely. Comes
What?
with free mustard. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun.
That was funny. That was.
That nice
yeah.
little anecdote there. If anyone was interested, thank you for listening. Plenty more where that came from.
Coming up next is our guest. But in the meantime, if you want to get in touch, find us on social media. We're everywhere. Or drop us an email. It's up to you.
They can email us. I mean, it'd be nice if someone messaged and said, I'd like to come on your podcast. If you do want to do that, just get your little keyboard out, start typing, and send us an email to howiveganpodcast@gmail.com.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Richard, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. All right.
Can you hear me well?
Yes, absolutely, that's a good setup you've got there with a fancy microphone and everything.
I come prepared. Look at me. It's not fancy. It's like, unfortunately, it's like a 30 quid one off Amazon, but I spent about 6 months researching it. And apparently it's the best of the cheapest. So we'll be all right.
Well, it's better than
excellent.
What we've got. I've got a gaming headset that my kids use. Come on.
As long as they don't come and ask for it back halfway through the podcast, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, they've not done it yet. That would be amusing, wouldn't it?
No, that would be. Yeah, that would be bad. That would be bad.
Rip it off your head in favor of Fortnite. That would be.
Oh, don't. Imagine. I'd disown
then,
them. Just disown them. Tell them. Give them back.
Make them live in the garden.
I'm trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about. I don't actually know what a fortnight is. It just means 2 weeks to me.
2 weeks,
yeah. I'm 75 years old.
You are absolutely not 75.
Oh, you're looking really good. You really look.
Yes,
good.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's the vegan. That's the vegan lifestyle for you, right there.
It is. That would be such a good scam to pull, wouldn't it? Because
yes.
nobody ever pretends to be older than they are. They always pretend to be younger than they are.
Yeah.
If you were like, actually, yeah, I'm 80 and I look like this. Even my hands don't look old.
Look at my beautiful complexion. I haven't got crow's feet or anything and I'm 94.
No. Well, actually, I did put on, you know, on Zoom, you can put on like touch up my appearance settings. I think mine is switched to like
can
the
you?
Max.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What? What is this magic?
I don't think it's particularly intelligent. I think it just like rubs a bit of Vaseline on the
Will it give me
on the lens.
Hair? Can it fill in no hair?
Imagine. I'm sure it could. There are plenty of TikTok filters that can do that for you.
Have you seen the one that's about this week about how it makes you look like you were when you were a teenager?
No.
The teenage filter. So I tried that. And obviously, as a teenager, I had no beard and I did have hair. And it was just like, cannot compute. This is like,
oh, what? It didn't get it right. I thought you were going to say it projected it was just, correctly.
It gave this sort of, it looked like it just basically took my beard and put it on my head.
It just whipped it yeah, upside down. It was
just awful, absolutely awful.
I don't think it'd do a good job for me. I was very large as a teenager. I used to drink Ambrosia Devon custard behind the newsagents at my lunch break.
Wow.
Yeah, like a 500 ml carton. And my mum to this day is like, you did that because you were gay. You did it because you were gay and you were getting bullied. And I'm like, I am gay, but I wasn't getting bullied and I didn't drink custard because for that reason. I drank it because it's amazing. All the things that
people do.
Why would you? I'd come into a sense of freedom with a tiny bit of disposable income from washing dishes once a week in a pub. And I thought, I'll spend it on some custard. drank custard.
I always knew it was gay.
Whoppers. Yeah. It's the custard that did it.
It's a dead giveaway, actually. Gays famously love custard.
It is one of those stereotypes, isn't it?
It really is.
He likes custard. He likes custard.
Custard and ice skating. It's just one of those things.
Oh, God, stop. I'm crying.
Jeez.
Have we actually started recording yet?
Yeah, we
have. Started recording, but I haven't done an intro, so I'll do it now. That's a very good segue.
Oh, man.
So.
What a start.
So, our guest is a food stylist, a recipe developer, a blogger, and this week, for the first time, will be a published author. Our guest today is Richard, aka School Night Vegan. Welcome.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us.
It's a podcast, but you can't see I'm doing my arms like one of those things outside a car dealership.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Is there a name for those things?
Ooh.
There must be.
Big blowy, right, that's man.
That's our listener request this week. What are those big blowy things with waving arms called?
There's got to be. Do you know how like there's a name for like the thing that goes around your beer can to keep it cold as a koozie? Everything everything that you can like brand as merchandise has a name. So like lanyards and every component part of the lanyard has a different name. And yeah, so I'm sure those big blowy men have a proper name.
Do you reckon we can get one made for us, Wes?
I was just gonna say, Richard did a great impression of one there. If it was me, I'd be the one that's just fallen and just stayed there.
limp over to the side.
There was a leak. There was a leak on the bottom somewhere. I hadn't fixed it.
To be fair, this is a vegan podcast. I think we've all got a leak in the bottom. Hey!
Oh,
leaking air from somewhere, aren't we?
Good Lord.
Oh, wow. So I'm going to try and bring it back on track, Richard. So I mentioned that you're going to be a published author. So your book is coming out on April the 27th, and it's called Anything You Can Cook, I Can Cook Vegan, which I think is an excellent, very, very descriptive title.
Good.
But what's the background to the book? How did it come about?
The background to the book is basically it's an extension of what I do on the blog. And if you're unfamiliar with School Night Vegan, the vibe is very much anything you can cook, I can cook vegan. So all of those things that you used to love to eat as a kid or pre-vegan, whether that was, 6 years ago or 6 minutes ago, I make it my mission to make the most convincing and most delicious vegan version of all of those things. And the book is really just an excuse to do a massive deep dive into that stuff. And as a blogger, we make a lot of decisions on which kind of recipes to do and to put out there based on what I think will do well on Google hits and what people can actually Google, what people can search for. So, it's stuff that has a name and classics and cottage pie and mozzarella and all of this sort of stuff. But the book was really an opportunity to do something much more personal and to just kind of try and veganize my entire childhood, like retrospectively.
Wow.
So we've got so many nostalgic dishes in there that hopefully it's cross-cultural, and hopefully I'm not going to alienate, say, all of America, because there's quite a few American dishes in there as well. But like, it's very British. It's very sort of, I would say even Northern English, because that's where I'm from. But there's, you know, there's a Scouse recipe in there. There's a Sayers custard slice recipe in there. There's a Manchester.
I knew you'd get the custard in. Recipe.
Yeah, it's my thing. What can I say? So yeah, it's. Wow. I hate the term comfort food because it implies that some food shouldn't be comforting, and I feel like all food should be comforting, but it's very much food that makes you feel at home, like you're at your grandma's house, and all the stuff that you've missed since going vegan.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you mentioned the blog there, which has been hugely successful, and you know, your Instagram and TikTok I found today has got thousands and thousands of followers. So how did you decide what goes in the book and what goes on the blog? Because I think when we were at the launch event, I think you said that there's nothing in the book that's been on the blog.
Yeah, everything is completely brand new. There's a couple of recipes there that are sort of revamped versions of classics that have done really well on the blog. I think there's a version, my mozzarella recipe is one of my best clicked, most clicked recipes. And there's an updated version of that in the book. So anywhere where I've doubled up, it's just an updated version. But yeah, I guess as with any book and with any sort of published project, I wanted it to be about me. I really like talking about myself, and I really
why not? Sure, book, go with it.
Yeah.
And I think as well, a lot of what makes food fantastic is that sense of shared nostalgia that we all have over these certain, not even necessarily certain food items, but just certain textures and certain feelings and associations that you have with particular dishes. And that was one of the things that stopped me going vegan before I did, the idea that I had to say goodbye to that sort of stuff. And just sort of rewrite my food culture from the ground up. And it's just not true. It turns out that you just don't have to do that at all. It's much easier to just carry on the way you're doing. But, you know, maybe it takes a bit of work. It's a bit of a learning curve at first. But, oh God, this sounds like an absolute plug. But honestly, anything you can cook, you can also cook vegan. The limits are endless now.
Absolutely. So I was looking, I was just skimming through. I've looked anyway, but I was just skimming through your Instagram feed earlier. And I've been trying my best to nail roast potatoes. And I saw your roast potatoes and I was like, oh my God, they look amazing. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm on a mission now. Next time I'm doing roast, I'm just going straight to your version of them. See if
please
I can nail
do.
It.
Yeah, there's a couple of tips and tricks, and I won't give them away because it'll do me out of clicks. But
yes.
But I mean, I'm a Northern lad, and I'm married to someone who, if it were up to him, every single meal would be a roast dinner. So it was in my interest to stay married, to find a decent vegan roast potato recipe that doesn't end up, you know, soggy, and that is gorgeous and crispy and golden. And you know, I had a couple of complaints from American followers over that recipe, just because roast potatoes to Americans aren't exactly the same thing. They usually use like new potatoes, and you know, it's a different thing. Whereas ours are like, can I swear on this podcast?
Go for it.
Get a fuckload of oil in the pan. That's basically the first rule of decent roast potatoes. Just absolutely swamp them in oil. But then my one tip for you, Wes, is drain that oil halfway through cooking and then
it'll crisp up
a good 15-20 minutes without any oil, and it really changes everything. For the rest, you have to go to schoolnightvegan.com. That's schoolnightvegan.com.
Yes. Excellent. Don't worry, we'll link that in the show notes, don't worry. So now one of my things that I've often wondered about recipe books and cookery books and everything is, how do you decide when you've finally got the recipe? And can you talk us through the process of, like, you know, you've got a dish that you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
What's the process for the sort of trial and error phase, if you like?
Yeah.
How does that work for you?
Well, I can only speak to my own processor because I've never sort of co-written a book, so I've never really seen anybody else's process, and this is the first time I've ever written a book. But the one thing that I can tell you is that it's a really long process. It's a really yeah. It takes a really long time, and I basically signed this book deal like in the summer of the first lockdown, so 2020, in like, I think it might have been August or something. But I had been developing a what they call a proposal for about 2 years before that, to try and, you know, and that obviously involved a couple of recipes as well, to kind of pitch to publishers. And so from that point that the book was taken on, I sort of started in earnest developing the recipes. And I would say eventually you probably cut about 20 to 25% of the recipes that you've developed for any book like this, just because, you know, it's a book, it's not an encyclopedia, like something's got to go. And also some of them are crap, so some of them don't.
Some you've got
to
hold back for the second book.
Well, yeah, I didn't do that foolishly, so now I've got to start from scratch. But for me, the process is all about trial and error, and sometimes that means looking at a non-vegan recipe and literally just removing this is the easiest example, okay, looking at a non-vegan recipe, removing the non-vegan ingredients, giving it a try, and it works out completely perfectly. And what I found is that with a lot of baked recipes, a lot of cakes and a lot of cookies and things like that, you can actually just do that and it just works. And I think a lot of us have been using animal products in a lot of baked dishes in particular, just because we're supposed to. And, you know,
it's always been done that way.
When you think of baking, you think of eggs, you think of butter, and you think of milk, and you think of flour. And it's like, well, okay, I'll get those things out and then I'll start baking. But actually, you can kind of just wing it a lot of the time. And then maybe the next step up in terms of complexity will be trying to figure out what exactly the animal ingredients are bringing to a recipe. So for instance, eggs in a cake recipe or in a baked recipe can bring, they're a emulsifier, so they bind the batter, they bring moisture, they provide fat, and they also provide protein. So all of these things, oh, and if you whip the egg whites, obviously they provide like lift and volume and all of this sort of stuff. So knowing a bit about what each of those ingredients does in the recipe before you remove it and try and replace it with something else is also really important. So that's when I start to feel like a mad scientist, sort of tipping things into do you remember the beginning of Powerpuff Girls? Do you remember the title sequence, or am I revealing my gayness now?
I think you're assuming that we're younger than we are, because I don't remember that was not around when I was a kid.
Can I ask how old you are?
45 and proud.
Okay, yeah.
Well, that's 45 probably next week, I'm proud.
Probably, so there's 10 years between us, so yeah, that's probably okay, just out of your wheelhouse. But yeah, you would have loved it, I promise.
If I was 20 watching Powerpuff Girls, I think, not the target demographic, I don't think.
I think many of your audience will know what I'm talking about, hopefully. But
yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, that's when you start to feel like a mad scientist and things feel fun, and I feel like I should be wearing a lab coat instead of an apron. But the other thing to mention as well with this book in particular was that, so because it was lockdown that I started writing the book, I had to do everything. So normally when you write a cookbook, you will have, obviously the author writes the recipes, then you'll have somebody test the recipes, that's a different person. You'll have somebody proof the recipes, you know, go through them and check for errors and all of these sorts of things. Then you'll ultimately have someone photograph the recipes, style the recipes. Usually you'll have an assistant doing the actual cooking on the day, and you'll also have a prop stylist and an art director. So that's like 10 to 12 people working on a cookbook. And partly because it was locked down and partly because I'm a control freak mental patient, I offered to do all of that stuff myself. Wow. And somehow we ended up with a book at the end of it.
That's incredible.
And but yeah, I it was that's probably why it took so long, because it was, you know, just one person doing 12 people's jobs. But yeah, so again, I can't speak to other people's processes because mine was rather atypical. Not many people do it that way for good reason, and I won't be doing it again that way.
What an experience, though, to have that level of control over what goes in and how it appears in the book and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it incredible. Just helped it to feel a lot more personal again with the nature of the recipes too. You know, I could pick the props based on, I'll go back to the custard slice recipe. I tried to style that picture as though it was at my nan's house, because my nan used to give me custard slices whenever I was off sick.
Oh, fantastic.
And so I've got doilies in there. I've got this little lady figurine in the background that I swear to God that she had. And there's playing cards out, because we used to play cards, and a teacup and stuff, you know. So none of that would have made it in if somebody else had been doing that job. So when you buy the book, inevitably, because I'm holding a gun to your head, you will spot all of those little things, hopefully, and it'll give you a little sense of the real personal touch that went into it.
So it's kind of autobiographical in some ways, then, that it reflects you. It's not just a ton of recipes that you've thrown together. It's like almost the story of your life in some way.
It's what you get when you ask a vegan narcissist to write a cookbook. you get a sort of a memoir without actually asking for it. I don't think Bloomsbury, my publishers, were expecting a memoir, but it's also it also sounds like it's been written by somebody with undiagnosed ADHD, which is me. So again, I think the tone of the book in many ways is also very unique to School Night Vegan. And if you've been following for a while, and if you've somehow managed to read through an entire one of my blog posts on the blog, you'll feel that voice, you know, transfer into. So if you're one of the six people that actually like to read those full blog posts, then this is the book for you, baby.
Well, I hope you sell more than six. There were certainly more than six people at the launch event, and they all seemed very impressed, at the very least with the food that was on offer, because that was absolutely tremendous.
What did you enjoy eating the most?
Oh, God.
Matthew, what did you enjoy eating the most?
Yes. Wes was very jealous because he lives so far up north, he couldn't make it into London for 9 o'clock in the morning.
Where do you live, Wes?
We now live in Littleborough near Rochdale.
Okay, nice.
Beautiful,
but yes, yeah, lovely part of the world.
London's a bit tricky.
It's a bit of a trek, isn't it? And also there were big train strikes going on that week as well, weren't there?
There was, yes.
So I had to go and eat Wes's portion as well. So I had I took one for the team there. So I had the blueberry muffin with the cornflakes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That was incredible. Incredible. And the fried egg and sausage. Here. Yes, you have fried egg and sausage pap.
Egg is a real breakthrough.
I thought you were going to say it's a real egg for a minute there, because it's the texture and everything. It's the taste. It's the texture. Like, one of the themes that we've had on our little podcast has been, like, quite often things taste right or they've got the right texture, but very, very rarely do they have both.
Yeah, for sure.
That's it. But
what's so fun about that egg. I mean, the egg white and the egg yolk are two separate recipes in the book. And what's so fun about it is that the yolk is this wonderfully stable sauce, essentially like a condiment, and you can put it on anything. So obviously you can put it on, you know, fried egg baps or whatever. You can also put it on like grilled tofu, or I really love, have you ever had bibimbap, the like Korean rice bowls?
No, they're, but I'm gonna. That sounds good.
They're absolutely delicious. And they get, if you ever go to a proper Korean restaurant, they get served in, I think it's called a dolsot. It's like a really big, hefty stone bowl that's red hot when it comes to the table. And it like crisps the rice up along the the bottom of the bowl. So you get this like gorgeous crispy rice layer. But they usually come served with obviously like kimchi and all sorts of stuff. But they usually come with a fried egg on the top of the of the rice bowl. And it's my dream. It's been my dream for ages to try and replicate a proper bibimbap, but veganized. Wow. And this egg yolk sauce is just ideal for it, because as you can imagine, as your chopstick breaks through the fried egg and the egg yolk sort of seeps into the rice, and it just cut, it's like, that's the sauce for the dish. So it's crucial. And with this recipe, you can do all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, toast soldiers, again, nostalgic. You can get a toast soldier dipping in.
Yeah.
It's, and also the fun thing is that the egg white itself in that recipe is literally three ingredients. And I don't want to give it away again. You have to buy the book for that. But
yeah,
if I tell you now, can you remove it or bleep it from the podcast?
Yeah.
It's literally just...
And that's it. No way.
Yeah. My obsessive nature is coming out in full force here.
But if it means that the dish is as perfect as it can be, then that's where it pays off, isn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, weirdly, I would have loved to have been able to connect the egg yolk and the egg white as one recipe.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to alienate people who aren't into the idea of like spherification, or, you know, sort of, because that's how most people do those sorts of vegan fried eggs. Have you seen anyone do that before, where you put it in like an alginate, sodium alginate, I think it is, and it forms like a little case around this blob of sauce. There's a place in LA that does it called Crossroads Kitchen. And so you get that nice little pop and the sauce sort of runs out and whatever. But but it's a lot of science, isn't it, for people to do on a Sunday morning when you just want an egg bap. So
a lot of cooking science, isn't it? It's just chemistry, really.
That's the joy of it, in my opinion.
Yeah. So were you like a food creator before you were a vegan food creator, or is that something that's happened since?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I was, this is where I get vegan egged off the stage, but I was an ice cream man. So I ran an ice cream company in London from 2015, I think it was, to 2018. And basically I had a tiny little ice cream van, and I used to make ice cream sandwiches, like American style cookies with ice cream in the middle and then loads of toppings. And it was great. It was really fun. It was fantastic. And I got to meet a lot of people. It was my first job in food. And ultimately I closed the business because I became a vegan through proximity to Eat Che. Did you ever go to Eat Che? They're a vegan Vietnamese street food gang in London, and I shared a production premises with them for a while, and they are the nicest people anyone has ever met. So they used to just sort of feed me food all the time. And I think they were the first people, honestly, that showed me that you could be a foodie and a vegan at the same time. And obviously everyone hates the word foodie, but I actually really like it. I think it's a great way of describing someone who isn't necessarily a chef, isn't necessarily bothered about like expensive restaurants or whatever. I just like food. I like eating and I like food. And they did that. They showed, they made amazing food and it was all completely vegan. And so that was basically what led on to School Night Vegan as being my next venture. I sold my van, taught myself to take photos because that's a huge part of running a blog that no one ever really thinks about. You have to do all of it, you know, unless you're paying somebody to come in and do that for you, in which case you're already at a loss. But, you know, most good blogs, people do the photography themselves. And so essentially what I took from running an ice cream company, though, was the joy of developing recipes. And I used to develop all of my own ice cream recipes, make all of my ice cream in house and stuff like that. And it was not vegan ice cream, unfortunately. It was all dairy. And again, just the excess of that, like just seeing that much milk and that much cream and that many egg yolks in one place, it just got to the point where I was like, what am I doing? You know, what is going on? Because I was vegetarian basically from about 6 years old. My parents are veggie and my sister went veggie quite early on in my life. And so I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I should do it. My parents were always very honest about, you know, where our meat came from and what happens in the process and that sort of stuff. But so I think like a lot of people, I tried to pretend that I didn't know the facts and the reasons to go vegan. And then once it's sort of, I'm sure you've got a really similar story from everyone you've spoken to, but once the sort of floodgates start to open, it's just like, well, how can I go back? Like, how could I ever do anything other than this? And so at that point I decided to close the ice cream company and drive my van into a lake and let it sink to the bottom of the, no, it didn't. I sold it.
So how did your vegan story evolve from there then?
Well, I was into basically I'd had like 2 years of sharing a production space with these incredible vegans and eating incredible vegan food. And then obviously just gradually sort of opening my eyes to vegan cooking. And that job was so ridiculously demanding, running a business in London. God bless you to anybody who's doing it. It's a nightmare, especially any sort of food business. And so basically the only times that I would have to myself to actually practice cooking vegan food would be of a school night. So like Monday to Thursday, essentially, or Sunday to Thursday. Yeah. Sunday is a school night, isn't it? Sunday to Thursday. And so that's where the name comes from, School Night Vegan. I was practicing away. And then I was in Toronto visiting my husband, who was working out there shooting. He's a TV director and he was filming Umbrella Academy out there. Do you ever see Umbrella Academy?
Program.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. So that was, we've got Umbrella Academy to thank, because that was where I was when I went vegan. I was in Toronto and I went to Planta Burger, I think it's called, this amazing burger place. And I was just like, what am I doing? Like, why would I ever want anything other than this? Like, this is all I need. And there was this amazing like vegan poke place. And I mean, Toronto is just incredibly vegan friendly. So there couldn't have been a better opportunity to try it out. And I think we had just watched What the Health. We are What the Health vegans, which is odd because I'm definitely not a health food vegan. I'm definitely the opposite. But you know, it just takes that one thing to sort of kick you over the edge. Yes. And then that was it. I was in it from that day on. I sort of was there. And what I like to call myself is a professional vegan. It's my job.
I like that.
you too are professional vegans. We're in the same
club.
You get paid for
your job. We do it for love. We love vegans. No, that's
weird. Nobody is paying you to do this wonderful work. Spreading the word.
Not yet.
We need to get you set up with a Patreon account and get some bonus content out there.
We've asked a couple of celebrities for sponsorship, but they politely declined.
Yeah, really? Politely declined slash block us. No, they don't block us. They just ignore us.
What would be expected from a celebrity sponsorship?
Limo.
You want them to provide you with a rider for each episode.
Just tea bags. No.
Yeah.
Tea bags. Yeah.
Yorkshire tea, obviously.
Obviously.
Our own headsets so our children don't try and take them off us.
Yes. Mid
recording, that sort of thing.
start small and work your way up. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. That's it, exactly. Yeah, we've got very few demands. No. None at all. None at all. It's funny you mentioned, just to go back a little bit, when you mentioned about having to learn how to take photos of food and all that sort mm-hmm. of thing, because we discussed this on a previous podcast with Elle, who was who's a food blogger, and mm-hmm. her Instagram page is absolutely incredible, and mm-hmm. our photos, you always try and line it up, get the lighting just right, and it still just looks like a pile of slime.
it's
proper art.
Honestly, it's one of the hardest things that I've had to learn in my entire life. And then as soon as I got to grips with it, suddenly Instagram was like, photos? What photos? We're going to do videos now. So I had to just learn how to make video content from the ground up. But yeah, but that's the joy of it, isn't it? It's the learning curves. It's the things that challenge you. And as long as you enjoy it, as long as you like it. And I'm not trying to pretend that I'm a particularly incredible photographer or food stylist or, you know, whatever, but if you can do it well enough to get by and to sort of produce something that you're proud of, which I did with the book and with the blog, you know, that's all you need to do. And actually with the blog, I have a setup now where I can bash out my photos for the blog in, you know, an hour. You know, it doesn't take me any time, whereas to begin with it used to take me like 2 days.
What?
It used to take me just the photography used to take me like 2 days from like shooting to editing to publishing. It used to take me about 2 days, and now I'm just much faster. So I'm sure you have similar things in your life where you just sort of establish a workflow and then you kind of just get into the swing of it. And
yes,
and there you are. Yeah,
a bit like editing the podcast, eh, Wes?
Yeah. How'd you get on with that? All right.
Yeah.
Well, don't, because actually you're about to have, you can cut this if you like, but you're about to have a new competitor on the podcast scene. This is top secret.
Starting a podcast.
You're actually the only people to know this, other than the guests of my own podcast. But yeah, don't worry, it's not a vegan podcast, it's just a food podcast. But okay. It's actually called How I Do Vegan. No, I'm joking. Okay. Can you imagine? It's yours, but one word different. No, it's called Lunchbox Time Machine, and it's all about food and nostalgia. Obviously, that's all I care about. So I ask people, special guests, to talk me through their four main most formative food memories from throughout their life, and we go back in time and witness them firsthand with the use of my homemade lunchbox time machine.
Oh, that's incredible.
Wicked.
Apricot jam sandwiches was mine in my packed lunchbox every day throughout school.
Did you ever get raided by ants?
Not that I can recall. I think I would probably remember that, but
do you have any teeth left?
all my own teeth. I may be really old, but I have all my own teeth.
It's amazing.
I haven't got my own hair, but I have got my own teeth.
It's amazing how much like jam and marmalade were a staple of our childhoods. Like, I don't know if that's the case anymore. I don't think that's what. I don't think parents feed their kids jam anymore, do they?
No.
There's nothing better than a hunk of prime Labrador steak, wonderfully marbled. And that is almost entirely dependent on how it's produced. Elwood's Organic Dog Meat has complete control of this entire journey. So I'm here at Elwood's Farm to find out a little more about it.
Welcome to Elwood Farms.
Thank you very much, Elwood.
I hear you do a bit of barbecuing.
I do a little bit of barbecuing every now and then, yes.
From a chef's point of view, consistency is key for everything.
It doesn't matter if it's a Rottweiler ribeye, a Pyrenees mince, or a lab sirloin.
You can always tell when the dog comes from a place where it was well reared. And every step has to be right, doesn't it? Oh, you should see these guys. So, from an Elwood's point of view, there's complete traceability.
Absolutely. Unrivaled traceability, so it's fine.
Every single piece of dog meat.
Yeah, from pup to farmer's market.
Everything the dog's been fed.
Everything about it.
For each dog?
Yeah. Only Marks and Spencer's and Whole Foods do this.
Where else can people order from?
From ElwoodDogMeat.com. That's ElwoodDogMeat.com.
For top quality meat from dogs for people. Meat that's local, sustainable, and humanely harvested. There's only Elwood's organic dog meat.
They seem pretty friendly, don't they? It's more responsive to me than my kids, to be honest.
You went vegan then about 6 years ago, you said, which is, we've noticed a bit of a pattern that there's either BC vegans or AC vegans, and that's before Cowspiracy or after Cowspiracy.
Wow, and yeah, that's so good.
It seems like such a key moment in the movement over the last few years has been around that time. There seemed to be, I don't want to say an explosion in vegans because that sounds weird, but a huge awareness of veganism. Mm-hmm. And since then, it's just really took off. But so when you first went vegan, then what was the biggest struggle?
Ooh, do you mean culturally or gastronomically? Do you mean like what did I miss the most, or
if you like, or
whatever the struggle is.
If there hasn't been a struggle, then that's awesome.
No, they definitely. I mean, I don't think there was as much of a struggle as a lot of people face who aren't professional cooks, because obviously there's an ongoing conversation about whether veganism is exclusive and whether it sort of whether it's accessible to people on, you know, low income or with, you know, working two jobs or whatever. And I have to agree, like it that initial learning curve that you face as a vegan trying to cook a meal, the very basics of it, everything just takes at least twice as long. And obviously it doesn't stay like that forever because you learn your little hacks and you learn your little things, but it's almost like you're having to learn to cook all over again. And for me, as a, I don't want to say chef, as a cook, that was the joy of it. Like I got to experience that and enjoy it because I love it. I love that. Like that's my world. That's what makes me happy. But for, you know, a single mom trying to raise four kids and do two jobs, that's the most terrifying prospect ever. You know, you just want to be able to put a meal on the table for your family, and that makes sense. So for my struggle was definitely nowhere near what it, and also because I was going from vegetarian to vegan, that's not as nowhere near as big a jump as, you know, full meat to full vegan. But I would say possibly the thing that I really struggled with was was brunch.
Oh.
Was brunch as like a millennial gay. It was very hard for me to imagine a world where I couldn't go to a brunch restaurant and have an egg-based brunch. Like it was just terrifying. I mean, this possibibly was before, no, it can't have been before avocado toast, but avocado toast saved a lot of us, I think.
It often comes with an egg on, doesn't it?
Yeah, so or then feta you've got to cheese at least ask for on. That yeah, exactly. So I really, my favorite meal of the day, no joke, is brunch. And I often don't eat anything until like midday anyway. And not because I'm trying to like do intermittent fasting or whatever, but just because I really I'm not a huge fan of eating early in the day, and I really am a huge fan of having like something that crosses the boundary between breakfast and lunch. Those gorgeous like a breakfast burrito. Is there anything better than a breakfast burrito? Honestly,
good point.
Anything that feels like, oh, I'm having a nice hearty breakfast, but it's the scale and indulgence of a like
a little bit
massive
naughty,
lunch. Yeah. It's so, just makes me happy.
One of our fans came up with an advancement on brunch, and it's when you have pudding before lunchtime, and he's called it brudding.
Whoa.
So that's something for your next book. I'm not sure.
So there's no lunch in there at all. It's just breakfast and pudding.
Actually, it's breakfast and pudding. Yeah. How would you? Otherwise, it'd be punch.
Brulching,
which sounds weird.
Appetizing. Sounds like a foreign word for vomiting. He's just had a good old brulch in the bin. I can get on board with a good old brudding. I feel like those what were they called? The cornflake blueberry muffins that you had at the launch were brudding.
They're brudding. Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
There we go. Martin, that one's for you. he'll dine out on that. Excellent. That's fantastic.
But yeah, I feel like as a meal and as a part of as a time of day, that's a real difficult spot for vegans, especially if you're eating out, because everything's just like, would you like to add an extra 4 poached eggs for £6 or whatever? And it's like,
yes,
I don't want one poached egg. Yeah, yeah, no. Exactly. Yeah. And often the scenario, if you don't want that stuff, is you just have less, you know, they just remove it from the saddest experience I ever had was a full English that I had where I literally, they didn't have a vegan option. So I literally just had to go through all the things and say like, can you take that off? Or can you replace that? It was at like, Harvester, are they called? Like one of those like chain pubs. And I was dead sad because we'd just taken the dog to have an operation. And so I was I guess I'll just try and eat my way out of this. And then it came, and honestly, I was like, can you replace the egg for some like grilled tomatoes or something? You should have seen that tomato. It was honestly, it didn't start as a cherry tomato, but it was a cherry tomato by the time it made it to me. And just half a grilled cherry tomato on a plate was just like the saddest experience ever. So yeah, that's my struggle, that tomato.
Yeah, the struggle is real.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
So when you went vegan, then what did your friends and family?
Well, my family were majority already vegetarian. So my mum and dad were vegetarian and had been for way longer than I had, and my sister was too. My husband had gone vegetarian when we met, and I sort of gaslit him into becoming a vegetarian. and then I think I was the first person within my family to make that move. And then both my mum and dad went vegan. I think it was like 6 months after me, because I made them watch all of those things, and they know about all of that stuff anyway. And they're super, super animal rights activists. And, you know, but we all, I don't know if we all did this, but I think we all do as much as we can. No, wait a minute. Let me rephrase that. We all do as little as we can to feel as good as possible, if that makes sense. And so I feel like I making the change to become a vegetarian, even though I knew all the facts about how gross the milk industry was and how gross, you know, what they do with the male chicks and all of this sort of stuff, you sort of manage to convince yourself that like, oh, I'm still making a change, I'm still doing enough as a vegetarian, whatever. And, you know, if that's the end of your vegan journey, then fine, like you are making a change. But I had it in me to go vegan, and a lot of people do. And I think a lot of people, once they've made that move, look back and go, God, I wish I'd done that 10 years ago, you know, I wish I'd done that sooner. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of us.
Once those curtains have opened and you can see the reality of it, you're just like, oh,
yeah,
have I been doing?
And I think everybody likes to have this sort of transition story of like, well, I really missed bacon and wow, it was tough, but then I got through it and cheese was such a nightmare. And then, blah, blah, blah. But honestly, when you put it in perspective and you think about what happens at the other end of those products,
yeah,
fucking grow up.
Yes.
It wasn't a struggle. It wasn't a struggle. No. You just couldn't have a cracker with cheese on. Like,
yeah.
It's not hard. It's not difficult to do. And obviously we can get into big conversations about, like, I think there's a lot to be said for people who are expected to sacrifice aspects of their culture in order to go vegan. That's a real murky topic. And I've got a lot of time for people talking about that. But at the same time, if you're like a white British person who's like, oh, I just really miss my Sunday roast. Grow up. Just, do a bit of research, do a bit of reading. Take a couple of hours to learn how to cook a nut roast or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And just grow up. Just do it.
Yeah. Or listen to people.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to get cyberbullied off the face of the earth for this episode. But it's true. It's true.
Yeah,
I think my overarching point when I talk to people about veganism is, honestly, it's not that hard. It's not that difficult. I mean, I don't know what your circumstances are. I don't know what your cooking abilities are or, your disposable income or whatever. But in reality, it's not that hard. It's really not that tricky.
Definitely not.
What about you? Did you have anything that you, after I've said that, I'm like, tell me about your struggle.
Why don't you go first?
Did you have a thing that you were like jonesing for?
No. Once I watched Cowspiracy one night and that was me done. And then that was it overnight. And I didn't miss anything. Possibly chocolate a little bit, but I'd got it in my head that milk was disgusting. As soon as I'd see an image of a person laying under a cow sucking the nipple of a cow, I was like, burr, yeah. Burr. So anything with milk in it, I'm like, no, that's disgusting. You look at a brioche bun in the supermarket, it's got milk in it, and you're like, why? Because they brushed the top of it, and I'm like, well, I don't want to eat that, that's foul.
Yeah. Why have my crisps got milk in? Why have my crisps of all things?
I know.
Get it out.
Yeah.
Come on, Pringles. Are you listening?
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't really miss anything. I realized that I'd made a massive error for 40 years. And went, I'm not doing that again.
Did you were you a meat eater before that?
Massive meat eater. I was the butt bacon. My missus was vegan when I met her. And I did all the bingo questions with her, all the bingo vegan stuff. And it was it was ridiculous. And I regret that now. But, we live and learn. And
we do.
I think we've on this side of the fence now. So I'm like, bring it on.
Exactly. I think we've all said some horrible things about vegans throughout our life, no matter how vehemently vegan we are now. I was such a rat bag to some vegans that I knew, and just because, like everyone, like I was afraid, like I'm scared of change. all humans are. I would argue that the majority of conflict in a social setting, everything that we're seeing going on right now with in America and with how people are treating trans people and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, we're all just scared of change. Yeah, and if you just take a step back and go, hang on, is it actually going to be the way that my anxiety is telling me it's going to be? Or is there another person on the side of this? Or is there an animal on the side of this? And, in reality, that fear of change really halts a lot of progress. And if you can get past it, you can make a lot of stuff happen, I think.
I was talking to someone at work about it the other day, and they had this, I sort of tried to explain it in the simplest sense. You know, we've said, like, people say, no, let's take it back. So, you know that thing about, like, slavery used to be legal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that used to be acceptable, and homosexuality used to be illegal, and mm-hmm. all these things were changed, whatever. And I said, to make that even simpler, they had a massive, there was a massive problem when Formula One racing were going to ban cigarette advertising.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh my God, oh my God, you can't take cigarette advertising off Formula One cars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did. And now Formula One racing still makes all the money it does.
Yeah.
That change transitioned quite easily, and it didn't affect anybody. And this mm-hmm. is exactly the same. If you just allow it to happen, if you educate yourself and you understand what is actually happening and how the wool has been pulled over your eyes for this long, you can make a change. You can make that difference.
And actually, I'd argue that it did affect people, but in a positive way. Yeah. You know, the amount of people who stopped associating cigarettes with, you know, exciting cool car races things. And cool yeah. things and all of that sort of stuff. Like, that must have saved many, many lives. And the same yeah. goes, obviously, for the other things that you mentioned. So, yeah, I mean, fear of... And sometimes it just feels arbitrary, like it's just people afraid of change, not because the alternative seems bad, but just because it's all they've ever known. And yes. I'm not just ingrained, angry. Isn't it? Yeah. I'm not angry at those people. I think that's a very human trait. But I think what's also a very human trait is being able to, like, use your brain and sort of digest these things in a way that's, you know, critical thinking. And yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? It feels, do you feel like your transition through that brain space from meat eater to a vegan has helped you to change your mind on any other things outside of food and outside of eating?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when we moved up here, coming up to six years ago, I went vegan a year after that. And then I started learning a bit more about myself. Mm-hmm. There was a few mental health issues that I went through, but I also started educating myself more on culture and our society and being more accepting of different things. And I changed my opinion on things so much. And the biggest thing was that somebody on another podcast, Scroobius Pip, the legend, had basically taught me that you can't have an opinion unless you have an informed opinion. So go and find out as much information as you can on a subject before you make any judgment on it. So I will remain silent, well, as silent as possible.
Says the podcast host.
Yeah. I'm the sub host. No, but I'll try and remain as silent as I possibly can until I have enough information to bring a justifiable argument. Does that make sense?
Definitely. And I also feel like, sometimes, well, often I do this all the time, but we make decisions about who we are based on fear. And I feel like even if you don't learn anything new, or even if you don't go and find information that, like, in and of itself changes your mind, sometimes just doing the research and just putting facts on a page next to each other helps you to feel less afraid of stuff and helps you to sort of make decisions based on, like, who you are and what you stand for, rather than, like, I'm afraid of, insert Daily Mail headline here, you know, I'm afraid of whatever. So, I think that's a big one for me. And being vegan, making the transition to being a vegan was probably the first time that I'd ever had to, like, sit myself down and go, what are you so afraid of? Like, what's so scary about this? Like, why is this on your, why are these people on your list of people to be to be afraid of? Because there's nothing innately, you know, challenging or threatening about veganism to anyone. You know, even if even if I am the preachiest vegan in the world and I'm sat yeah. next to you at a dinner party, you could still not be a vegan. Like, I'm not going to punch yeah. you in the face.
I might do.
No.
Well, I'm speaking for myself here.
And if you can change the way that you not only change your whole diet, but also change your lifestyle mm-hmm. around veganism and change the way that you think about that, what else can you change?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I've and Wes, we've talked yeah, about this before. Yeah. That's how we've kind of approached it. Like,
it's actually really liberating. Isn't it?
That. Yeah. So what else have I been lied to my whole life yeah. about? You know. Yeah.
And it can also, I think, it can start a real domino effect, honestly, of just sort of unlocking, and not in a like terrifying existential crisis sort of way, but in a like, well, I was only doing these things and I only had these things in my mind as pillars of my character because I've always been told that that was an essential part of, you know, being a human being. You know, we eat meat, we drink milk, we eat cheese. Like, these are all things yeah. that we're supposed to do. And it's like, well, yeah. what if we don't? You know, what happens if exactly. we don't? We don't die. So
yeah,
that's it, the big what if. Okay, yeah. So what advice would you give then to anyone who's thinking about going vegan?
After all of this militant raging we've just done, honestly, my advice would be to just have fun with it. Really take your time. Nice. Really, I think I have struggled. I think I mentioned earlier on, I was quite big as a teenager, and I have struggled for many years to kind of unpick the, I don't want to say trauma because it's definitely not that intense, but unpick the sort of work that was done around being a fat kid in the 90s, like in the peak of the quote unquote obesity epidemic, you know, when like yes. Jamie Oliver's doing his thing and there's fat camps everywhere and all of this sort of stuff. And I know how ineffective shame and guilt is in terms of making people change stuff about who they are, because that was how the 90s dealt with fatness, shame yes. and guilt. And actually, I think we still do to an extent. You know, it's we're all learning now, but I think to an extent we still do. But I know firsthand how ineffective that is at making people change, particularly when it comes to food. And I think for a lot of people who feel like they've made a change and they feel the sense of urgency around helping other people to make the change, and in terms of saving animals' lives and pushing the movement further and faster and faster, I think that can often also sound a lot like guilt and shame to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't think it works. I don't think it works. I think the only thing that makes people want to change what they eat on a regular basis and permanently is if they love what they eat and if they keep loving what they eat for the rest of their lives. And that all starts with teaching people to cook the foods that they've always loved. It's much easier than reinventing the wheel to just say, oh, your favorite thing is lasagna. Great. Here's how to do a vegan lasagna, you know? So on a very practical level, if you're thinking of going vegan, make a list of the things that you love to eat, you know, maybe eight recipes that you love to do, and just spend a week trying to veganize them. Just spend a week trying to, you know, trying out different recipes and trying your own recipies if that's what floats your boat. But
or buy a cookbook with loads of old fashioned recipes in.
It Got could point. Be called Anything You Can Cook, I Can Cook Vegan by Richard yeah. Bacon. That was seamless.
Available at all good book retailers from April 27th.
So yeah, in a nutshell, take your time, enjoy it. Do not leave your love of food behind, and do not guilt or shame yourself into doing anything, because it just doesn't work.
Love that. Yes.
Fantastic. So who's your vegan inspiration, Richard?
Oh God, that's a good question. Apart from my two heroes sat in front of me right now. I don't know. he's not a vegan. I always say this, but I would really like to do for veganism what Otto Lengi did for vegetarianism. And if you Ooh. Think about where vegetarianism was 20 years ago, you know, the people thought it was extreme. Like if you raised a vegetarian child, you were an abusive parent. Like these are all things that sound very familiar to vegans right now. But now vegetarian recipes are regularly on the front cover of, you know, The Guardian, and regularly on the front cover of BBC Good Food and all of these, you know, Bon Appetit and whatever. So how do we get veganism there? How do we get people past the point of thinking that this is an extreme lifestyle that's sort of borderline cult behavior, and start, you know, allowing people to enjoy vegan food as just food, as just delicious food? So although Otto Lengi is not a vegan, and I wouldn't even say he's really my hero, I love what he did for vegetarian food, and I would love to do that for vegan food as well.
That's tremendous.
Awesome.
So do you have hope for the future?
Of veganism in particular, or just in general?
Let's say A and B. A, veganism, and B, in general.
So that we started that question because of the term dystopia, about vegans living in a non-vegan world, feeling a bit shitty about it. So do you have any hope for that? That's basically what it means.
Yeah.
I do. I often talk about veganism as existing in three ages. And I think the first age of veganism was lentils and quinoa, you know, the kind of veganism the kind of veganism that we thought that we had to exist within when we went vegan.
Something our ancient vegan friends had to put up with for a long time.
Exactly. And like carob chocolate and all of that sort of stuff. And then I think the second age of veganism was a reaction, a pendulum swing to that, which was Beyond Burgers, like vegan KFC, vegan McDonald's, all of these sorts of junk food, and taking it to the exact opposite end of the health food spectrum. Both of these types of veganism, by the way, have a place and are important in various stages of people's vegan journey. But I'm really excited for the third age of veganism, which I think we are just entering, which is where, you know, technology has advanced so much. People's understanding of veganism has advanced so much. People are less afraid of veganism than they used to be. And I think, honestly, it's just going to result in people eating whatever they want. It's not going to be healthy. It's not going to be unhealthy, in the same way that, like, an omnivore, if someone was like, are you a health omnivore or are you a junk food omnivore? It's like, well, I just eat food. Like, what's the... Where's the need for a category there? And I'm excited for the point where, I mean, it's fun, isn't it, to joke about health food vegans and ethical vegans and whatever, all of those different stereotypes. But wouldn't it be lovely to have a world where we just eat what we want, and there's no sort of like intercultural judgment going on, and there's no comments on my like burger posts about what's the processed carbohydrate count in this thing? It's like, just eat what you want. Just stop worrying about what anyone else is eating and eat what you want.
Can you imagine a world where everybody accepted everybody else?
Oh, wouldn't that be gorgeous?
Can you imagine?
Well, we're talking about real life things here, not some fantasy.
Sorry.
Well, let's at least just start with the vegan scene anyway, and work our way forwards. But I am excited for what comes next, because I feel like with any pendulum swing, there's a slightly less intense swing the opposite direction, and then eventually we'll get to the middle, where, as with vegetarian food is right now, it's kind of just normal. Like, it's not unusual to find a vegetarian option on a pub carvery menu, you know. And I'm excited for that to get for us to get there with vegan food.
Awesome.
Richard, we're at the end. Thank you so much for coming on and being a wonderful guest.
Thank you for having me.
I can't remember the last time I laughed this much in such a short space of time. No.
It's been a tough week, but I haven't laughed as much for ages. It's been great.
Oh, good. You've got to laugh, haven't you? That's the whole point. It's the whole point. And hopefully exactly. The book makes you laugh as well when I can get a copy out to both of you. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And I think there's a lot of vegan cookbooks out there that are very, very earnest and serious. Yeah. And that's just not me. I'm just not that person. And that's not my veganism either. So fingers crossed that these cackles and guffaws and laughter all continues when you start to read the book.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you so much. We're looking forward to that. I wish you all the success in the world with the book. And we'll have you back on when the next book's coming out as well.
Yes, please. Thanks very much, guys.
Well, how about that? That was an absolute blast.
Wow, man.
That was, what a guest. What a guest.
My face aches. And I like it. I like it when my face aches through laughing that much. I said on there, and I'm going to just mention it again. I know it's a bit melodramatic, but I've had a bit of a long week. And that's made it all fine.
Good. Good. It's, I can't remember the last time I had that much fun in such a short space of time. It's
no,
absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he's a top, what top a great guy as well. Top guy.
Yes, and we'll look forward to seeing his book when it's released.
Yeah, man.
And, trying out some of the recipes because I got to tell you, the food that was available at the launch was just incredible.
So was that his food that was at the launch?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. That's insane.
Mm. Yeah, they were making it in the little kitchen at the side. So, that was stuff from his recipe book. Cool. There was a huge amount of stuff there. Fried egg baps, blueberry and cornflake muffins, Danish pastries, leek and marmite cheesy wheels, salt beef bagels. Yeah, absolutely incredible. And that was just a few of the things that were provided. But the book it's a good thick book. There's plenty of recipes in there. That's going to be absolutely tremendous.
It's going to be good. It's made me excited to go and get it anyway.
Cool.
Coffee is great. That's great.
Yep. Absolutely. Good fun that.
So I was at work the other day.
Yeah.
At one of my two main jobs. And I was working with a guy and he said to me, I've got to ask you a question that I'm not really looking forward to the answer to.
Ooh, you know that's going to be good.
He said, there are four of us on our team and we've all had time off sick. Except you.
Yes. Wow.
I said to him, what do you want me to say? He said, I just think it's a bit weird. I went, well, don't get me wrong. I've had COVID. I've had COVID once and I did have to be off sick for that because those were the rules.
Yeah, you had to be, yeah.
But I generally don't take sick. I have to be bedridden and unable to get out of bed to be not going to work. I'm a bit sad like that. Nope. It's not that I like work, I just don't like taking time off sick.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was a bit poorly before Christmas with that possible COVID thing.
That flu-y type thing, yeah.
But I carried on regardless. Apart from that, I have not been physically sick or any other ailment. Four, coming up to 5 years.
Oh, what happened 5 years ago, Wes?
Don't know what happened. 6 years ago, I moved. 5 years ago, I went vegan. Isn't that strange? Now, I'm not saying that it is the be-all and end-all of anything. People can still get sick. People can still get heart disease. People can still get cancer. People can still get all other things.
And you weren't really a sicky person before, so it's not like you had lots of ailments and all of a sudden they all cleared up. But
I did have definitely... two. I did have two colds a year. I did have food poisoning, stuff like that. So, you know, take that as you will.
Yes. Oh, remember that time we went to see the pretend Foo Fighters in Nottingham?
Yeah.
You had food poisoning really bad.
Oh, it was well rough there. I don't know why.
Yes.
But yeah, I've not been in inverted commas sick, and not physically sick, but just ill. Generally ill for approximately 5 years. And neither has my wife, and neither has my son.
Yep.
I don't know about anyone else. I can only speak for us three, but we have noticed that, and obviously my work colleagues have.
Mm. That's fantastic.
So
that's really good.
So yeah, I'm great.
So did he like your answer or not?
The guys I work with, they're very engaged and they'll listen.
That's good.
Yeah. That's good. So just listening. And they all take the mic, but they will listen when they want to, when they're in the mood to. My other job, I just get ripped apart for it, so whatever.
Well, what can you do? At least someone's noticed something and is interested enough to ask the question, even though they know what the answer is. So that's really positive. That's good. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, well, yeah. I think that is probably a good place to finish.
Yeah. On me being a health superhero.
Yeah. Can't get any better than that, can it?
No.
Hopefully you've enjoyed that as much as we have, because that was great fun.
Yes.
And if you want to give us some feedback or get involved, just send us a message on our socials or drop us an email.
Yeah, you can drop us an email at howiveganpodcast@gmail.com or go to our socials at howiveganpodcast. See you next time.